Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 68. Chris Jordan coming to you live from Austin, Texas tonight. Man, had an incredible time this last weekend. I went out with my brother to the Monsters and Legends event out in Cibolo at Grange Hall. That was put on by Everyday Paranormal Events. Barry and Brad Kling, our guests that we had on a couple weeks ago. That was an epically fun event. The VIP stuff was fantastic. Amazing guitarist, amazing food, guys. Whoever y'all had cater that barbecue, man, it was awesome. But the speakers were amazing. A little bit was canceled outside because of rain, but they had a full house. We heard some great presentations by our good friends King Gerhardt, Lyle Blackburn, Greg Lawson. Was the MC. He's actually in our interviews later on. If you want to hear our interviews from the Texas Monsters and Legends event this last weekend, those are coming up, of course, in our second part of the show during our pre-recorded segment. We'll be airing all of those. We got a great interview with Greg Lawson about investigative practices when it comes to the paranormal. He is an active police officer, so talking with him about things like that is absolutely awesome. He's going to be coming on more and more. We also had a chance to talk with Nikki Folsom about the Fae. The people of the Fae, fairies, leprechauns, things like that. Very apropos at St. Patty's Day. And, of course, our friend Ryan Edwards. We had a chance to catch up with him for a few minutes. He gave a fantastic presentation on paleontology in relation to cryptozoology and the actual science of cryptozoology, not just the pop culture concepts of it. Speaking of which, I was the amazing winner, right, folks, of a chupacabra bone. I won two prizes out of five. Get out there, kids. Y'all have fun at Project Graduation. Everything went to benefit the Project Graduation group out there at the high school in Cibolo. But I was the winner of a chupacabra bone from King Gerhardt. He donated that to the raffle. So I want to have him on to talk about the investigation that this bone comes from. Here in just a second, we will be talking with Roy Schoffel. He is from MUFON. As many of you know, I'm a MUFON member. It's actively the only gold card I carry upside down. Not only carry upside down, but in my wallet. I'm a lifetime benefactor for MUFON. I believe in their research so much. They put out some great magazines. We will be talking with Roy. He is the head of the San Antonio chapter of MUFON. We'll be talking with him in just a minute about cases in Texas, what MUFON is about, how you can get involved, with investigations in a modern day aspect. We'll get to that right after we talk about the news of the week. Of course, the news of the week is brought to you by Curious Realm over on our Facebook feed. Feel free to stop on by, join the group. Over 1,000 people having conversations. This is something that we will definitely be talking about tonight out of WMTW.com. Starlink satellites are muddling UFO sighting statistics, research say. Out of fizz.org, a new species of trapdoor spider is confirmed in Australia. Out of popularmechanics.com, alien life may exist in the zone between night and day, a new study says. Out of space.com, private Japanese moon lander reaches lunar orbit. And out of yahoo.com, mountain lion attacks man who was sitting in hot tub at Colorado rental home, officials say. That is just some of the news that's fit to print, folks. Come on by, join us on Facebook. Just go look up Curious Realm. Of course, while you're online doing that, make sure to stop on by the website. CuriousRealm.com is the website. That's where you can tune in live every week. That's where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can get the knowledge vault full of declassified government materials, all kinds of things. That's also where you can visit our newly developed Curious Realm store. Not only Curious Realm swag there, but books by our guests. Stop on by. Check that out, curiousrealm.com/store. And of course, while you're there, make sure to stop on by MUFON.com. MUFON is where you can go. They are the Mutual UFO Network. They have been investigating UFOs and UFO phenomena for, God, since the late 60s, if I'm not mistaken. But welcome to the show, Roy. How are you doing today?
Chris, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on your podcast. Deeply appreciate this invitation, and I thank the audience for coming on this evening to listen to what we have to say.
Well,
and Chris, you're exactly correct. MUFON started in 1969.
Yep.
So you're dead on.
Yeah, yeah. And, it's interesting because they are one of the first people to actively put out, I guess, a form of protocol when it came to investigating. And you know, I belong to a lot of groups, Roy, when it comes to social media. Unfortunately, half a lifetime, I'm 47 now, half a lifetime lived editing audio, editing video, living behind a lens. I tend to break a lot of hearts, my friend. And it's interesting to me that so many people get upset when MUFON doesn't accept ring videos. MUFON doesn't accept second party information. MUFON does witness sightings. So let's get into, before we hop into cases here in Texas as of recent, let's get into MUFON, what they are all about, and the protocols involved with reporting a sighting to MUFON.
Well, it's an extensive process. I will tell you that field investigators are thoroughly trained. Here in Texas, which has the second largest number of quote UFO sightings in the world, second only to California, we undergo constant training. We have a thing called the Third Thursday event, which is an hour of training by someone within the state of Texas on aspects of their research. But MUFON is all about the science and the research efforts placed into identifying the UFO phenomena for the benefit of humankind. And the research protocols are very, very serious. I come from the realm of research and development years and years ago. In fact, one of the people I was there, lab technician, was a well-known gentleman in science fiction writing, Isaac Asimov. So I've had this background in the technical arena that I bring to my research into the cases that I get. Now, we don't accept hearsay cases. You're 100% correct on that. We do require people to go online and fill out a sighting report. That's the beginning of it. And then the sighting report is analyzed at headquarters just to see what's what. And it's analyzed from an overview perspective. It is then assigned to a state, and then the chief investigator assigns it to a field investigator. If it is a case where it is involving, lack of a better word, close encounters of the third kind, or, you know, alien contact or purported alien contact, we hand it over to our experience or research team immediately. And these are folks who've got 20, 25 years of researching case investigation, field investigations under their belt. Myself, I've only got about 150 cases so far. But this ERT team will go out and do more than, if it's more than a sighting case, if it's like a landing, aliens involved, abduction studies, and all that, they are pretty much first on the scene. So we we pre-qualify all the MUFON reports that folks are kind enough to file with MUFON. And then it comes back into the field and is assigned to us. We generally have 90 days to complete our investigation. And they do monitor your progress all the way through, seeing if you need help or you need to pull in someone else to assist you or to guide you. Right now, as section director for the San Antonio area, which is Region 5, I've got 5 field investigators under my tutelage at this time. So it's very all-encompassing, very, very detailed, very technical, and sometimes, as you can imagine, very boring. But the work has got to be done. And that's what we do. I can tell you we're always looking for field investigators. We do have study guides, a handbook to study from, and then there's a maximum four-hour online test. For myself, who played a lot of football back in the day, I'm very pleased to tell you it is an open book test. So that helps out quite a bit because it's a monumental amount of studying to do.
Yeah. And it is. I remember last year whenever my wife and I went to the MUFON conference. That was one of the many, many conferences that I sponsored as Curious Realm last year. And I remember whenever we went, one of the first things we heard just kind of in the background and passing as we were setting up my equipment at our booth was somebody walking around the vendor area like, oh, well, this is no alien con. And as someone who attends a lot of pop culture conferences, you know, I go to comic conventions and things like that and speak about podcasting and all that kind of stuff. And in the back of my mind, I was like, no, it's not Alien Con. You're not going to pay $200 for a picture with a TV celebrity here. Like, there were literally people going through an 8-hour long field investigator class. Like, that day, they started at 6 a.m., you know? And that is very much what the MUFON conference and things like that are about, is recent cases. The way that, like, the whole theme this last year was UFOs, UAPs, and the media. You know, how the media has treated the topic over the many years, and why the pivot turn. You know, why the turn on heel, like you're on an NFL field suddenly, in the way that UFOs, UAPs are covered in the news.
That's been a big thing, Chris. You're way correct on that. And it really happened with the release of the TikTok videos.
Yeah.
A gentleman by the name of Lou Elizondo, he couldn't take the lying anymore. So he quit his job with ATEP and came out in the field and said, these things are real. But for a while, for instance, the Israeli government, Brazilian government, many governments across the globe have always recognized the UFOs were real.
Yeah.
Here in the States, I don't know why, probably political, probably social, a lot of different reasons, they chose to deny. And, you know, like I said, Texas is second largest state for reported UFOs. The United States is number one. And we have a bunch of them here, and a lot of thought as to why they're there. But, you know, we always, again, looking for that field investigator who's a little bit of Sherlock Holmes and a little bit of James Bond. What? So that's the type of, go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, let's start getting into what field investigation, because of course, you know, much as Indiana Jones would say, you know, I'd love to say everything is raiding a tomb, but real research is done in the library. You know, real archaeology is done in the library. And the more I've spoken to, I guess, other field investigators, people in the world of cryptozoology, paranormal, things like that, that is the absolute truth. Before they ever spend money on an expedition to put boots on the ground, there is a lot of effort that goes into seeing if boots even need to be put on the ground.
That is correct. All these cases are pre-qualified and analyzed from the perspective of the field investigator. And each field investigator has their own little techniques that they use. And I'll share some of mine this evening.
Please.
But I will you know, like I said, my background is technical. Real life job is architectural consultant. And with that, I'll give you an instance. We had one thing out in Uvalde, and the gentleman was reporting this, that, and the other thing. I said, wow. So I had another field investor go with me, who was one of those people that worked for one Alphabet Soup government agencies whose name you can't mention. And I also grabbed a good friend of yours, Peter Baker, who's really good at the paranormal, and we went out there. Of course, we picked the coldest night of the damn year to go out there. And we went out to, west of San Antonio. And we got there, and the gentleman was telling us what he saw, how he felt, blah, blah, blah. And I'm a pretty basic guy. So I'm looking around, and I look at the home he's living in. And I said, did you add on to that home? He said, yeah. I said, you experience these things only at night, right? Yes. What's in that room? He said, my bedroom. I said, wow. Okay. So I got my EM meter out, and myself and the other investigator were going around his own building checking EM, electromagnetism. And we got to the bedroom, and it was spiking all the time. He had basically built what we call a fear cage. So when he went to bed in the evening, he was bombarded by EMFs.
Oh, wow.
Which mess up your brain. We found it nowhere else in the house. We found it on the property also, but it was out by the road where the cables were buried. We had some EM readings out there. But just by that, I said, what you need to do, you know, for me, to you, best thing, leave here. I said, do you have a girlfriend? He said, yes, I do. I said, go stay with her for 3 or 4 days. And, we never got the final results, but literally the the EMF meters were spiking the whole time we were out there in that bedroom. So all evening he was bathed with this radiation. So that's the type of things that we look at.
And you know, that is, it's very interesting that you bring that up, Roy, because I do a little bit of work here and there with what are called targeted individuals, people who claim Havana syndrome type symptoms long before right. Havana syndrome ever existed. And it's I've definitely found some strange things, and I still believe every single person that I've been with, because it has not been proven otherwise. However, the first thing I do, which most of them question, is bring out my gas meter, bring out my radon detector, bring out my, you know, Geiger counter, things like that. And let's see if you're living over a fault line. Let's see if you don't have a, like you said, some sort of EMF situation going on, because most people don't realize how sensitive you can be to electromagnetic fields, especially the strength of field that we have nowadays.
And you're correct. If you just take a fluorescent bulb out and walk underneath some of these high power lines,
yeah,
and hold that bulb in your hand, it will light up brightly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how much energy is giving off by these things. You know, a little while ago, Chris, you mentioned the Starlink problems we've been having.
Yeah.
They have caused quite the stir. MUFON has a whole section devoted on their website at MUFON.com, as you announced earlier.
Yeah.
And has a photo there saying, if you see this, don't call us.
Oh, it's I've got the actual report a sighting right now. The first thing on there is Starlink. And even here recently, we had a major alignment of Jupiter and Saturn that, does not exist on the regs. It was a huge alignment. And I mean, to the point where even professional airline pilots were nosediving airplanes thinking it was an oncoming plane. Like these are trained observers that fly their route regularly. You know, it's not like the eastbound leg of an airplane is, you know, not known by the pilot that flies it all the time. So it's interesting to see that, and to see that, yes, you know, even trained observers can fall to that.
And they do. But let's look a little bit further into, well, 1 week from today. There's going to be five planets in alignment.
Yep.
Very rare occurrence. But that five planets, I guarantee you, and March 28th is also the night we're having our MUFON meeting in San Antonio. Coincidence. But I'm sure we're going to get a flood of reports that evening and into the following morning. Five planets is a very unusual situation, but it happens, and we have to be prepared for it, and we have to be somewhat diplomatic. You just can't tell people, no, you didn't see what you thought you saw. Yeah. So it's all in the approach also, and that's part of the learning process for becoming a field investigator is how to tell someone, yeah, you saw something, but here's what we believe it to be. And we are trained and taught that once we get over an 80% certainty level with physical data backup, we can make the call. Mm. And that's what we do. We're never 100% sure.
I will
tell you that there's probably 95 to 98% of the cases are explainable. But it says other 2%, the 2 to 5% that present the most interest.
And that is probably the biggest rallying cry that we have on this show, Roy, is that whether it's paranormal, UFO, UAP, crop circles, like, yes, okay, 98% of them are fake, 2% are not. And the 2% that are anomalous have some really wild stuff. And a lot of the faked ones even have some really wild stuff. But it's like, you can't, you're an architect. Like, the prime example is you can, if you left a 2% remainder on something,
the building collapses.
The building collapses, exactly. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe it's the, you know, the chemistry joke of you're not part of the solution, you're part of the residue.
That is correct. My first degree was in organic chemistry, so I appreciate that comment, and always very true.
Yeah,
always very true.
Because there's, yeah. I don't know of a field of science where 2%. Well, we got it. We got it 98% right. What about the other 2%? You know,
yeah.
So we have to look at the anomalous 2%. We literally have to whittle it down to where there is nothing but the anomaly left to investigate.
Exactly. And that was the Sherlock Holmes theory. You know, you eliminate everything that is possible. And whatever is left, no matter how impossible, has got to be the result. And that's a very good philosophy to carry through. You know, and you're talking about that 2%. I remember a comment about political science major one time. He said, Roy, he said, I'd tell you the truth four or five different ways before I'd lie to you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So it's always good. So would you like me to share a case?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's, you know, even going into that aspect and the fact of, hey, you could talk to five different witnesses of the exact same event and get five totally different stories. So trying to filter that and coalesce that as an investigator is exactly part of the conundrum. So go ahead and let's get into our first case right here in the Lone Star State.
And they're all in the Lone Star State, which is cool, but it's always interesting. People are more in tuned seeing UFOs. They're not embarrassed by it anymore. No one's, you know, pulling out the foil, giving away my age, the tinfoil hat. But the one I want to share, I have three to share with y'all. One was on the Gulf Coast, right outside of Rockport, right there, you know, Padre Island. And it's somewhat humorous. I don't mean to be crude, but it was a couple, guy and his wife. Every year they went down, celebrate their anniversary, and they rented a hotel for the weekend, blah, blah, blah. And then they did exactly what they did on their honeymoon night. They got in a truck and they went down to the deserted beach and had their honeymoon. So they were honeymooning once more, and they saw something. And they took a photo of it, and it was just sitting right above the water. There was no one else on the beach. all their, the wife got so freaked out by it, they stopped all their adult activity. And she was screaming at him to get back in the car. He's out of the car taking the photo. The photo comes to me. And great couple, great witnesses. And that's the key to a good investigation, good witnesses. So I analyzed everything, looked back and forth. And when I got done with it, I called them back. I always call. If they're going to take the time to file a report, I'm going to give them my results. So analyzing the photo, and we have different programs to analyze photographs. Please understand, this is for everyone in the audience, that an iPhone photograph is not a photograph. It's a replica. That computer internal to the iPhone will change things on you.
Sure.
It's really a replicate of what's out there. It's a great thing. It has aided all of our investigations fantastically, but there's always the downside to new technology. So I'm looking at this thing. I'm blowing it up, running the pixels, seeing if it was an adulterated photo, because we do get people trying to hoax us.
Sure.
And I noticed something. So I go back to my data, and this thing is sort of pushed, smushed to the north. And I say, that's unusual, you know, for an object to have that shape. So going back in it, blowing it up, checking where the wind was, what was the wind speed, what were the atmospheric conditions. I said, you know, this thing looks like a gas flare off of an oil well. And I went back, pulled up the data on active rigs, you know, out in the Gulf of Mexico, and straight out from this couple was a flare. A flaring well. It was just burning off excess, you know, gas. And with the wind blowing the way it was, that's what led to the misshaping of that particular globe. The original photo showed it looked like a perfect globe. But when you blew it up and ran the analysis, you could see where it was tailing off to the north. So that's a case where, they interrupted their evening activities. I hope they still had a great anniversary weekend. But the lady was very, very shaken up by this. But by going through it, I got hold of him and said, here's what you saw, folks. So even everyday items to the human eye or to an iPhone can appear to be something that they're not.
Well,
and we were able to pinpoint that.
It's interesting that you bring up the iPhone thing, because, you know, people tend to forget the fact that we are writing and rewriting over the same area of memory, all kinds of things. And yes, as you said, it is a replicant of what's going on. It is not an actual, like a photograph where it is a moment stilled in time that is, physically represented. It's much harder to have artifacts in an actual piece of film than it is to have artifacts in digital photography.
Right. Digital, you've got to pull it apart pretty good.
Yeah.
When you're doing your research. But, you know, there's a common explanation. Now, to the naked eye, those people saw a UFO.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen that way. I do have the case here, Chris, that you and I spoke about. You thought it was quite humorous.
Yeah.
And just sharing with the audience. I don't know why I get these cases. We have a chief investigator who's got a quirky sense of humor, and I get some strange cases. There was a case up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and it was a very, very elderly lady. She's 87, 88 years of age. And she swore that the aliens had come down that evening. She filed the whole report. Sweetheart of a lady. Great interview. And they said the light was in my window. It was so bright. It woke me up. I grabbed my iPhone. I ran outside onto the porch, blah, blah, blah. And I did all this, took the photograph and this, that, and the other thing. I said, oh my God. So as we go through the conversation and the investigation, I said, do you wear glasses? She says, yes, I have trifocals. She said, I really can't drive anymore because I'm pretty much legally blind.
I said, okay. I don't see well at night.
I said, anything else, you know, you want to tell me? She said, yes, I take Ambien. And, oh, my God. Okay, here's a case, 87, 88-year-old woman, wears trifocals, yeah. legally blind, probably on Ambien, sees this huge light come into her bedroom, and that's it. It's a UFO. They're coming to get her. That's all she thought about. But she jumps out of bed, and with Ambien's a damn strong drug.
Yeah, yeah.
She jumps out of bed, doesn't put her glasses on, and runs outside with her iPhone. And I was like, ma'am, please don't do that again. Okay. Not at your age. Don't do that again. And I, of course, her photograph, we can analyze deep enough to tell you what iPhone it was. Well, this was like an iPhone 5, a very old iPhone. And, you know, quality wasn't good, but, you know, she described everything. Her address was righteous. So I went back in, started taking a look at the physical surroundings. And her home is in an area where her bedroom window, because you can, you know, pull the stuff up on Google Earth, was facing a supermoon that night. Yeah. It was the supermoon that lit up her bedroom. It was a supermoon that filled her window. And when I got back to her, I said, you know, this is what I've got, ma'am. You know, you saw what you saw, but here's what we pretty sure it is. And went through the whole thing. And this very nice, nice, well mannered, polite elderly lady said, damn, Roy. I said, damn. I figured, okay, she's going to brace me on this.
Yeah.
She said, I was hoping to like get abducted and get molested a little bit because, you know, I haven't had anyone in my bedroom in a long time. And I'm going, oh my God. You know? So
honest,
you get
if nothing.
All types. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I think she wouldn't be abducted and molested.
Not really the type to lie, seems like.
No. But you know, when you look at all the factors between the trifocal, yeah. the Ambien,
the layout of the house. Itself.
Yeah. So
I remember, you know, my mom saw little people outside of her fifth floor window at the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no little people out there, man.
And I think this particular witness was hoping for any people outside her window that don't come into her bedroom. So, you know, that's one of the ones when I reported, I had a phone call from the chief investigator. And chief investigator goes, Roy, he get the damnedest cases. I'm like, you assigned them to me.
You're the one that gives them to me, man.
So, but I have one spectacular one that I'd love to share with you,
please.
Chris, and the audience. It made the front page of the MUFON magazine in November. And was called the Granville, Texas Sightings. It was probably my best piece of research that I had the opportunity to perform. It was one of those where everything gelled in my brain. And, you know, we've chatted. I played football for 27 years. So something gelling in my brain doesn't happen all that often. But with that, Granville, Texas sighting. One witness, several corroborating witnesses, and they were nurses. All these people were nurses. And very fascinating reports. The lady was walking her dog. Her phone stopped working. She was listening to, you know, music on her phone, had the earpieces in. Everything stopped working. All the dogs in the neighborhood started barking. She did get a pretty weak photograph of this object in the sky. And this has happened several times in this area. And at one point in that area, the sighting, and Granville's a small town, 35, 40 miles southwest, I'll call it, of Fort Worth. And some of the people there got so upset. One lady was very upset that she saw this thing, not the witness, but another lady saw this thing in the sky, was on the phone with the police. Unfortunately, she had a heart attack and dropped dead right there on the phone with the police.
Oh,
that's
wow.
The sad part of the story. The folks were that worked up about it. I said, man, Granville's in the middle of nowhere. And the way I do my investigations, I take the point of report and do a 60-mile circle, 30-mile each way radius around the 60-mile diameter around the sighting spot. And I start checking things like New Fork. Okay, the National UFO Reporting Group. Did they have anything? Did the newspapers have anything? Did the police have anything? No one had anything, but it's a very unpopulated area. But what I did find out was within that radius, below this sighting, was the Comanche Peak Nuclear Power Plant. And on the other side of that, going west, was Stephenville, which was the site of a 2008 yep. sighting that was witnessed by over 35 people, including law enforcement officers.
Yeah.
So there's a triangle there. So continuing the research, going back into the MUFON files, and we're somewhere close to 130,000 reports right now, which all thoroughly investigated and all receive a disposition as to what we believe they are, what we know they are, or what they're not. And thank God for computers, because I would hate to have to go into someone's file room and dig back through all that. But we found well over 35 sightings there in the last 14 years.
Oh, wow.
From that area. And a lot of the activity centers around the Comanche Peak Nuclear Power Plant and Granville, with some of it over in, you know, Stephenville or Stephenville, spelled with a PH. I'll call it Stephenville, from 2008. So there's been monumental sightings in that area. Now, what's interesting about that area, it's exceedingly high in mineral resources and very high in limestone also. Limestone, we know, holds a lot of energy. So maybe these are attraction points for this.
Sure.
This, to me, was a pure, unadulterated UFO. You know, whatever you want to call it. Unidentified aerial vehicle, unidentified yeah. flying object, unidentified aerial phenomena. It's not to mean it's extraterrestrial.
Yeah, yeah, but not explainable by normal means.
That is correct. And there have been... I follow the social media in Granville after that. Just, you know, I want to confirm all my findings.
Yeah.
And there have been reports of black helicopters up there at night. Not just one or two, like a formation.
Interesting.
So, you know, now you're down to a conspiratorial type theory, which I don't want to get into, but, you know, this yeah. doesn't add up.
No.
You know, it just doesn't add up. So I did call it a UFO. And again, it was the front cover of the MUFON Journal, which there are guys that have been researching a lot longer than me that never made that type of honor.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was very complimented by that. And
we have had quite a few banner cases like that in Texas. Of course, the Stephenville sighting. I mean, the Cash Landrum case, that happened right down the road from my family's property in Kinnefick. And like you said earlier, Texas is quite the hotbed for sightings, reports, things like that. What is the process of somebody bringing a report to MUFON, Roy? Let's say, because I'm going to show something on air right now. I show it regularly. I meant to send you a copy of it, but on screen right now is an odd flashing light, circular, flashing in many colors, pulsating, black in the center. All kinds of wild things, Roy. This is the star Sirius from my backyard as recorded in my camera. Now granted, I could post this to numerous social media groups blind. Just, hey, recorded this in my backyard, and more than one person would probably hop to and go, hey, I seen that Pegasus. I saw that thing in my backyard too. But how do you go about A, taking a sighting in, and B, beginning to vet the sighting?
Great question, and thank you for that. And I'm going to juxtaposition us to
please
the folks in cryptozoology. You know, you were with Ken over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Ken's a great guy.
Awesome.
But cryptozoology has suffered from everyone submitting all these damn videos,
yeah.
proven or unproven, uninvestigated. Just, hey, here's a video. I saw something in the background.
Well, and they Ken will say all day long, even on this show, like, we ain't going to prove it with a video. We ain't going to prove it with a picture.
Yeah. But your investigation has to start somewhere.
Yes.
And when you have a lot of things, a lot of information hitting at one time, that's not exactly proven. Not that it's,
yeah,
you know, incomplete or it's false. It's just not proven.
Yeah.
You're behind the eight ball already because someone else is really controlling the dialogue at that point.
Mm-hmm.
MUFON went about to do it a different way. So on the MUFON site, there is report a UFO. And it's just a punch list of items that you can input. You don't have to fill out the whole thing. Just give us dates, times, places where it happened, what you saw. You know, a little bit of information, yeah, about yourself. You know, are you from this earth? Okay, that would be a good one to start with. You know, and we get a variety of people, all walks and shapes in life, that just fill out that form. So that form then goes to headquarters and they take a look at it and say, okay, it's got enough information here. We can begin to work on this immediately. If it doesn't have enough information, well, we need more information. So whatever's filled out is what we begin with. Some of the reports I receive are great. Some of them are pretty sketchy that I've got to really work with the witness on and pull it out of them. And remember, these people are taking their personal time to make a report. And they're not familiar with the report. Many of them, the vast majority, it's the first time reporting. So they're trying to figure out this system to start, yeah, with. So are they comfortable? No, not at this point. They are not comfortable. So it goes to headquarters. They took a look at it. They assign it certain classifications, you know, based on the Valley rating system, you know, and we'll have some, like, just say, for instance, a class one, get on this now. You know, get on this immediately, within 24 hours. Or a class three, which could be a historical case, 5 to 7 years old. Someone just found a photograph somewhere, you know, or had an experience. You can take your time a little bit more with those. But when you get a hot one, you got to jump on it, and they do classify it for you. They being headquarters. And then it comes down to the state. And we do have a chief investigator down here in El Paso. And she makes all the assignations of the cases. You know, she'll review them again, take a look, say, "Man, this one looks like a tough one. You know,
yeah,
this is a weird one. Give Roy the weird one. He's good on weird ones, you know, or on historical ones." And everyone's got their strength and weakness. And the chief investigator knows this, but we all have reports. We're all working on at least one sighting report a month.
Wow.
So we stay in practice. Oh yeah. There are that many. There are that many. And you've got 90 days to get these things done. Now, the experience or research team, ERT, they take a little longer because, yeah, there's more humans involved. It's just not data. They have a different grace period, but it all starts with that report where it says report a UFO. And it's just fill out the form.
Wow.
You fill it out online and you can claim, "I don't want to be contacted by anybody." You can claim, "Yes, you can use this information," or "No, I wish to remain anonymous." All, yeah, that's in there.
Yeah.
So there's no threat to you. Now, there's only two people that are going to have a conversation during this investigation. That's your field investigator and the witness. That's it. No one else is going to enter into this conversation.
Wow.
So it is between the field investigator and the witness, and they do all the work. And then it goes back through the system. But we take the secrecy of the witness, their desire for remaining anonymous. That is core to what we do. We are not going to go out and publish a book on your case.
Yeah.
Some of the cases that we spoke about here tonight, I was very, very cautious in the information. You all needed to know the locations, but we deal with hundreds of cases,
yeah,
a year here in Texas.
Yeah.
You know, so that's where it all begins. And the field investigators now, we have field investigator level one, which are the rookies, and then field investigator number two, which is someone who's done everything, completed a whole bunch of cases to the satisfaction of the state director, because it goes from the field investigator to the section director, in this case, me, if it's San Antonio. I review the case, see if there's any parts or pieces missing. If they're having trouble drawing a judgment, I might suggest in a way of guidance, saying, "Hey, have you looked at this? Have you looked at that?" Then it goes to the state director. and chief investigator who also look at it. So there's very little chance of something grossly wrong getting through the system. Too many eyes are on it.
Yeah.
But I stress to the audience, you're anonymous. You write down, you don't want to be ever have this information get out. It's a done deal. It does not get out.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the beauties of what we do.
Now, before everybody goes and starts filling out the form, I guess the main thing is that you have to be a physical eyewitness. This isn't the fact of like, hey, my security camera recorded something. Hey, my mom gave me this picture. Things like that.
Right. On the form, there is a space there saying, are you the witness? And yes or no. That puts it at a certain level. If you are not the witness, that lowers the level of urgency. It also lowers the level of credibility. Not that anybody would lie to us or try and mislead us, but we, like you, have got to be careful of hoaxes.
Except those crafty Canadians. That's
or folks from Maine.
That's
Canadians. They got Tim Hortons up there. You know, they're all happy.
I just thought it was interesting that on the form, one of the questions was, "Are you of Canadian descent?"
Yes.
So
you know, and that has to do. We have a series of things going with blood type right now. There seems to be indications that certain blood types can see more than other blood types.
Interesting.
So that's one of the reasons. Yeah. I'm AB negative. Okay. I have my daughter swears I'm an alien because no one else in the family has this blood type.
Hmm.
And AB negative is extremely low percentage of the population.
Yeah.
But it's there. So there's a lot of trends that we're now picking up on. And a lot of it's because we have the computer analysis now.
Yeah. Yeah, that is...
That's fascinating. That's an episode in and of itself. Because, I mean, there's, of course, been numerous claims of blood type. And, of course, perhaps connection with extraterrestrial breeding, things like that. So... Pretty incredible.
In particular, the Basques, B-A-S-Q-U-E-S, the Basque over in the Spanish Peninsula. That's some fascinating reading about those folks and how different they are from the rest of the European population. But with what we do as field investigators, it's very thorough. It's very in-depth. We cannot go out, you know, in addition to being anonymous, we don't go out and visit a person without another person with us. We want two field investigators on each visit, site visit. That's good business.
Yeah.
Okay. That's safety. In today's world, you need to be a little more careful than you need to be 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's some of the protocols we have established. And like I said, I'm fascinated by cryptozoology. University of Texas, San Antonio has cryptozoology courses, which when I finally fully retire, I'm going to start taking a couple of those puppies.
Heck yeah.
I'm fascinated by it.
Heck yeah. People forget the fact that that is an actual course of biological study, you know? And,
yes.
And even now, it's interesting because right now, the Rice University in my own hometown of Houston, their religious studies department has created a UFO archive. And like the works of Jacques Vallée are going there, all kinds of people. And it's interesting that it's the religious studies department that has picked this up.
Yes.
And to see more and more departments starting to look at things, material science departments, things like that. It's remarkable. It's great because there is a panoply of evidence out there. Even when you're talking about Bigfoot, that kind of stuff, like there is so much new evidence when you're talking about oil handprints and alleles that can be lifted from that. And it's phenomenal. And even going back with old evidence, old photographic evidence, video evidence, things like that in the MUFON archives and looking at it with new investigative eyes, looking at it with new technologies that we have available, unlike a lot of these other researches like cryptozoology, where unfortunately things are deprecable over time. You know, DNA is deprecable. Samples are deprecable. It's much easier to keep a catalog of witness reports and even be able to go through and peruse those with artificial intelligence and find matching keywords. You know, yes. The new ways to analyze all of this data that is coming out is phenomenal, phenomenal. When it comes to UFOs,
something as simple. Oh, UFOs and everything.
Yeah.
Look at the Bible code. I mean, without computers, we could not have run all the analysis they're doing with the Bible code right now.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating times for all of us. We're living through a very unique era in a lot of different ways, political, societal, where are we going next? What is the threat of AI?
Mm.
And a lot of people think AI is one heck of a threat. Now, is that going to offset the research that I do on UFOs? No.
Yeah.
Will it be an aid? It might be. Can it change anything? No one knows yet. No one knows. And you know, my hat's off to the guys in the folks in cryptozoology. They got a hard row.
Yeah.
In front of them.
Well, and you know, it's I think all of these sciences do. And unfortunately, like we were saying earlier, Roy, I think that science has a harder row to hoe once people figure out that they're, wait a minute. Like, what if they forgot 2% of your wall?
Yeah.
Would you notice? Because we're forgetting to investigate and scientifically look at 2% of the information. And I think that that is exactly where physicists, even modern science are starting to look at that 2% remainder now and go, wow, there is a 2% remainder, and this 2% is really incredible. To the point of people like Avi Loeb and stuff like that from MIT.
Yes.
You know?
Well, you go back a little bit just to see how things have changed. I don't know how many folks are familiar with this person, but Emanuel Velikovsky.
Mm.
Held the chair at Princeton University in the psychiatry department. The forewords of his books were written by Albert Einstein. That's pretty good street cred right there.
But yeah, a little
his
bit.
Books were interdisciplinary. The title of his books were Ages in Chaos, Worlds in Collision, and then there was a whole series after that. But those two books, this gentleman, Velikovsky, were fascinating. But Harcourt Brace Yovanovitch, HBJ Publishers, had so much pressure from the academicians that he finally had to publish his books in Penguin paperback form. That's not the case nowadays.
Yeah.
You have a book coming out in July by Eric von Däniken dealing with the Book of Enoch, finally, after many years later. The biblical book of Enoch that was not allowed in by the Council of Nice in the Bible. Nicaea, thank you. You know, you wonder how much has changed, how much more information is out there that we've got to work with. And I look at it as how much information do I have to work with?
Yeah, yeah, precisely. Because it really all comes down to the data and the points of datum. And I guess really, Roy, I think what troubles a lot of people, and I don't mean like troubles, like keeps them up at night, but what bewoes a lot of people unbeknownst to them is the literal clogging of their filter.
Yes.
As opposed to many, like we were saying earlier, good research starts at the library. It starts with good, hard foot on the ground, Head Out of the Clouds research. But we have an issue with want of confirmation and with confirmation biases and with people not accepting information even when they're presented it, Roy.
I've had cases like that.
I mean,
so I know exactly.
I'm a believer of believers. Don't get me wrong. I myself have had my experiences. I told you about the strange things I saw flitting and flying over Houston many, many years ago. And it was really, really funny to me because the day that Tater contacted me, my buddy from high school, who I literally saw the object with, shout out to you, Billy, contacted me earlier that morning and we started talking about it. We haven't talked about it in years. Every once in a while, it'll get brought up, you know, over beers and cigars, something like that. But he called me up to specifically talk about that. And it was just funny to me that within 24 hours, that conversation happened, then the conversation with Tater happened, then the conversation with you happened to basically set up this interview. And we have to be willing to accept the fact that there is a slice of people who, even though they are scientific and of the world of science, Roy, will have issue.
You're correct in that, and a lot of that can have something to do with funding. Mm. Funding is the be-all and end-all
in
academic research, and that does sway a lot. But there is a need for people to have closure. And I remember reading the book Future Shock by Alvin Toffler, God, back in the 1970s. And he talked about instant gratification. And we have a lot of that in today's society.
Yeah.
You know, we want it now. And that doesn't lead to a lot of good research.
Yeah,
you really have to dig in. I spend a week on any new case, just looking at it, massaging it, doing the what ifs, writing them down. And then I start digging into the physical data. I let the witness know that I'm working on their case. I'll be in contact with them, blah, blah, blah. But it takes me about 2 weeks to accumulate everything. And this is probably 15, 18 hours of research to get to that point, let alone the subsequent interviews and conclusions. So it's all encompassing. And that's what we at MUFON do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I once again, as soon as I was able, I became a lifetime benefactor. I am a big, big believer in support what you believe in. And MUFON was one of the first places where I wanted to be able to give my support, and especially the support of my show, because it's...
And that you have done admirably.
Well, and once again, I'd love to have you on again and again and again to discuss, just every other month, to discuss new cases coming up in Texas, because once again, people do not realize the mad swath of reports that you guys get. And the number of them that come in and the number of them that come in that you are literally unable to investigate because they are not the primary witness or because of the situations that we talked about a while ago with photographs or what have you.
Exactly. Or the age of the witness.
Yeah.
And that comes into play. You know, this new case I got, 17 years old. I can't touch you, kid, until you fill out those forms, you and your family. I'm not even going to talk to you.
Yeah.
Not going to answer an email, not going to do anything. Seems to be a good case, but, you know, you can't get to them all. But the key issue is shows like yours, podcasts like yours, they make people aware that things are ongoing. Things are happening.
Yeah.
When I walk around the streets of San Antonio, I see a lot of people with their head down. They're on their phone.
Mm.
Dang it. Look up every now and then.
Yeah.
Look up every now and then.
Yeah.
I mean, there was an incredulous video out of Chicago recently that looked like Mothman. And this was just astounding to me. I was aware of the Mothman
sure.
Prophecies because living in Pennsylvania at that time. But man, this whole video, and it wasn't just one source video, multiple sources of video. Like, wow, we need to pay attention to what's above us. And that's not being done. And no one's going to poke fun at you anymore. No one's going to mock you. We know these things are real. The government knows these things are real. Many governments have admitted that these things are real. And by gosh,
We're pretty much the last ones to. We're pretty much the last ones to admit these things are real. I mean, there have been international consortiums on it, man. It's pretty phenomenal.
And so. And even something as old as the Klaatu, Michael Rene movie way back in the 50s.
Yep.
Day
the Earth Stood Still.
They were talking. Yeah. And they were talking about the Aunt B was talking. I don't know what her name was. Aunt B was talking about it was the Russians that were doing this. It wasn't, you know, men from outer space.
Yeah.
And that all our philosophies came out of the Cold War era. And that has afflicted us horribly.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, right now, a big conversation going on is if contact, how? And how do we prepare ourselves and how do we prepare humanity? And is humanity ready to have that conversation in an enlightened way? You know?
Exactly.
And
the questions you asked, your podcast, they will lead people to think about this, and that's the critical item.
Yeah, precisely. I want to thank you once again, Roy, for coming on. I want to have you on every couple months just to have updates from local MUFON and cases going on in Texas to even help encourage other people who may have seen something locally, you know, and been like, I didn't even know where to go to report it. Well, I'll tell you where you go, folks. You go to MUFON.com is where you go. There's the website right there, MUFON.com. Right there in the middle is the Report a UFO tab. That is the easiest way to go about it. Once again, Roy, I want to thank you for your time tonight. I will be in touch with all of this episode stuff, everything else. But we definitely need to get together sometime and have a greater conversation about what we can do with MUFON and everything else.
Chris, I would thank you from the bottom of my heart. I thank your audience. Deeply appreciate what you're doing. And
thank you.
I really appreciate y'all having me on board. And one last thing.
Yes.
San Antonio MUFON is on Facebook. Everything we have ongoing is on Facebook under San Antonio MUFON.
And
so if you want to find out,
I was going to say that's just it. If you want to find out, go find them on social media. They are highly active on social media, folks. And Tater is more than responsive with people and contact. So
yes, she is. She's fantastic.
Y'all have a great outreach in that way, and it's really great to see the response time that you guys have, because a lot of people do not have that when it comes to social media. So
it's kudos instilled
to
us.
You guys.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Chris, and again, thank you for having me as your guest. I really appreciated that, and again, thanks to the audience for listening to us.
Absolutely. Roy, once again, thank you so much. While you are online checking out everything from MUFON, folks, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. Curious Realm is, of course, where you can find all the episodes. We're rebuilding a couple things on the website. As you guys know, we have been under server migration. So the store is up and running. Feel free to stop on by. Visit the new Curious Realm store. That is where you can find books from all of our guests. Of course, the live page is where you can listen live. Download the free Curious Realm app right at CuriousRealm.com/app. Apparently soon they will allow side loading of apps in iDevices, but it's not there yet. So until it is, I don't want people to surrender their information to app platforms. So it's for direct side load on your device. All you do is go through, click the free app button, click the image, and it will install directly on the device that you are looking at it on. So stop on by and check that out, folks. When we come back, from our commercial break, we will be airing our coverage of the Texas Monsters and Legends event that happened in Cibolo, Texas this last weekend. That was put on by our good friends Barry and Brad Kling from Everyday Paranormal. We have some great interviews with Greg Lawson, Ryan Adams, as well as Nikki Folsom right after this, folks. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit podcastcadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is podcastcadet.com.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Curious Realm coverage of the first annual Texas Monsters and Legends Conference right here in Cibolo, Texas, being brought to you by Everyday Paranormal. We just had Brad and Barry on the show, a couple of great guys. This has been a fantastic event, great turnout for the first year. Our first guest is Greg Lawson. He is the author of How to Be a Paranormal Detective, as well as Roswell, the After Action Report. He is also our MC for the event, so welcome to the show. How you doing?
Glad to be here, man. Thanks a lot.
I want to thank you for the time. I mean, once again, it's a bubbling conference for the size room we have. It turned out to be absolutely full despite the weather. It's fantastic.
I was really surprised when we had that weather moving in. I was thinking, oh, God, here we go again.
You know?
And the place is packed.
Yeah.
I was amazed.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, for our audience out there who may not be familiar with you, Greg, tell us a little bit about your body of work and how you came into the world of paranormal investigation.
All right. So when I was a kid, my brother used to scare the hell out of me all the time, right?
Mine too.
Yeah. So that's what those brothers are for, I guess. And mine was 17 years old when I was five. So he was 12 years older than me. And he would put me on this motorcycle, and we would go do urban exploration. Mm. I'm 5 years old, no helmet, sitting on the tank of a Triumph Bonneville with my brother's arms around me. And we would go find old – and this is in this is north of Austin, between Austin and Round Rock, which was that time was kind of a dead zone.
Yeah,
It was just country, but there were all these old abandoned houses and old abandoned buildings and graveyards. And he would take me there, and we would get off, and you know, like if we went to the graveyard, he would look for the youngest child buried in there, and then he'd make up some horrible story about what happened to him and stuff.
You know about Johnny, right?
Yeah.
You heard of his story.
Yeah, and he was younger than you. And so, yeah. So that kind of started off, and of course, I then learned that behavior and did that to my friends when I got, you know, in elementary school, junior high, and then in high school doing the stuff. But back then, it wasn't a thing, right? Yeah. It was the weird kids that ran around in the woods. And so when I went into the Army, I got deployed. I was with the Rapid Deployment Unit at the 82nd Airborne Division. And so I got to go to a lot of different countries. And whenever I would go there, I would go do a little bit of research, and then I would try to go find the weird thing there.
Yeah.
So I got all in Central America, North Africa, the Middle East. And then I came back and became a cop. And learned about investigations, learned about evidence, that kind of stuff. And I went back in the military, and I was in the Navy, and deployed all through Asia, the Middle East, and in the South Pacific, doing the same stuff.
Yeah.
And I really didn't know it was a thing. I was just doing what I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
It did. I'm a child of the 80s, grew up born in 75, and even coming up in the 1990s, things like that. It was hard to find a paranormal investigation group.
Right.
They were not cropped out there the way they are now.
No. There's so many groups now, you know. You got a recorder and you got a
We're all walking around with the gear in our pocket now. You know,
right.
Used to be you had to have a whole backpack of stuff. Now we all have phones and cameras and microphones with
us
all the time.
So that's what I did, and the thing that really kind of got me into the actual professional side of it, getting paid doing it, was I was with the mental health unit as a cop, and in Texas, they have a thing called a mental health certification, and if somebody's having an episode of some sort of crisis that they're having mentally, they'll call a mental health officer after the real cops get there. And then mental health officer goes over there and tries to work things out, get them some help. The amount of alien abductions, demonic possessions, and very spiritual kind of thing that I saw people going through. We average about 7 calls a day.
Yeah.
And I mean, each officer responds to 7 calls a day in the Austin area.
Yeah.
And you know, do that for 2 years and see how much you have under your belt as far as getting interviews and investigations from people that are claiming to have these real experiences.
And even as Ryan was saying in his presentation, even learning to vet somebody as they're talking to you and being able to see those subtle body languages and, you know, are they making this up? Is it something that genuinely happened to them?
Right. And that's one of those things that when you're looking at that and you're evaluating somebody's behavior and their speech pattern and their body language, they might be thinking that they experienced it even.
Yeah.
And there's no indications that they're being deceptive at all.
Yeah. And because you're never going to convince them that that didn't happen to them.
Right.
Like, a prime example, one of the situations that happened to me that truly caused, for a little while, almost a crisis of faith, mainly because my church had no answer. And I was like, wait a minute, you're the Catholic Church. How do you not have an answer on this?
You recovering
Catholic?
Like,
we have a school. We we have a school of exorcism, Jack. How do we not have a
How do we not have
a decision on this?
So are you still Catholic?
I still identify as Catholic. I'm
That's
no longer a practicing Catholic.
I call myself a recovering Catholic.
My God is my God. My experience, and that's just it. Like, I was called to the seminary, and I was called to the seminary by a moment of presence where I was in the presence of the divine. Like, nobody will ever tell me different. Nobody in that church, the priest 10 feet away from me while I was kneeling at the altar, did not have that experience.
Right.
Like, I talked with him. He didn't have that experience.
Right.
But he was the one that was like, Chris, you know, you may want to think about some service. And I started exploring it. And yeah, like, I guarantee you, if I hopped on a polygraph, it would nudge and budge. Because that changed me, man.
And that's one of those things, you know, I do a lot of lectures, I do a lot of workshops, and I have people say, hey, come in and do a workshop on deception, on, figuring out whether people are lying to you or not. And I'm like, you know, that I can't do that in an hour.
No. That's years of conglomerate in the field, gut reaction, and learning to read those micro reactions on faces. Yeah.
And the point is like, if somebody is intentionally being deceptive, let's say a bar contacts a ghost group and says, hey, I want you to come in here and certify that my bar is haunted.
Sure.
There's a whole bunch of groups that will go do that. They
will
go in there and go, oh, yeah, we had these EVPs. We had this experience. There's these orbs here. Your place is haunted. And then they get to advertise as it's haunted.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's one of those things, like, all right, are they intentionally saying that this is a lie? Are they embellishing it? Or are they just getting it wrong? Or are they experiencing something that they're just not interpreting correctly? Or is it something else? Because I always try to eliminate all the naturally occurring things that it could be, and whatever is missing is what you got.
I don't have an applause button here, but I do in my studio, and normally that's where the applause would come in.
Yeah.
Because
I'm looking for what's missing.
Yeah, well, and that's just it. Like, a lot of my audience are what would be considered targeted individuals, people who suffer from Havana syndrome type effects long before Havana syndrome was ever diagnosed.
Right.
And I'm asked to come out because of my realm of expertise in audio, video, years of doing this stuff. I have all kinds of radio, RF scanning gear, things like that. Like, I can come in and tell you if you've got, like, 6G hitting your house, all kinds of things. But it freaks them out when the first thing I do is pull out my gas meter and a radon meter.
There you go.
And it's like, let's find out if maybe you're living over a fault line. Maybe you got a micro gas leak going on. Let's get rid of I bring out my lab grade, like, we could go in and start measuring tri-field meters. Like, here is a full on Geiger counter. Let's see what you got in your house, and let's eliminate all that before we even set up RF scanning gear.
That's exactly before the way we should.
Because I got an hour of setting up, so I can do this in 20 minutes, and we can find out if there's a common thing going on.
Right.
You know, but without that, do we even need to move into the RF? Because there's 101 things that could be going on in your home that could be causing the same similar issue.
Right.
You know, and you really do have to eliminate the obvious and then leave the the anomalous.
Yeah. What is that? Why is that happening? Yeah.
How does your experience, especially as a law enforcement officer and investigator, how much of that experience do you lean on in your paranormal investigations?
Probably about 90%.
Wow.
I'm
beautiful.
Everything from conducting the interview to a cross examination to collecting evidence, different ways of collecting evidence, what evidence really is, because evidence has become a very loose word.
Yeah.
In the last 20 years or so.
Let's explore that for a minute, because because of my realm of experience, I tend to break a lot of hearts in social media groups, Greg. I can explain tricks of light and lenses and film and even digital artifacting. You know, the idea of like a lot of people get upset with MUFON because they will not accept your Ring video. Well, technically MUFON takes witness statements.
Right.
So just because you recorded a Ring doesn't mean you witnessed it.
Right.
Also, that Ring is a forever loop over one SD card. It's always recording over the same thing.
Yeah.
And when it's done, it stops, it goes back to the beginning and starts recording over. So, yeah, you could end up with some digital artifacting there. You could end up with maybe a quarter frame of the mailman delivering something, and all you see is a shadow. All kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah.
From very modern, high-tech, almost 4K quality equipment. But if you aren't using fresh cards on every expedition,
zeros and ones can creep in.
They sure can. And you know, I've even with EVP, Greg, I've had a really interesting conundrum as an audio engineer and circuit designer over many years, because the whole original concept of EVP was the fact that the ghost could manipulate the weak magnetic field of the record head.
Yeah,
that is the digital artifact that was left. That's not a one and zero assumption of the sound that happened in a room.
No, it's not.
The recorder is recording sounds that actually happen,
right?
Not accidental things that affect a physical thing like a magnet.
So people ask me all the time, what kind of equipment do you use? You know, what is all expensive.
I'm sure you're not rolling reel to reel all night.
Well, no, but I
if
do.
If you want to, you let me know. I have one.
I do use analog and digital.
Good.
So I
good.
Throw my analog and digital beside each other. And, you know, it's amazing because digital will come up with all kinds of extra stuff.
Yeah.
And everybody says, well, see, the digital works better. It collects more data. I'm like, you're not understanding how this works.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong. Maybe that's how the communication happens. I don't
know.
What
is
the
spirit boxes?
Well, the Panasonic 60, what is the one that sold for $35 in the 90s?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Selling for $3,000 now. Get them on eBay.
Yeah, the ones that you can just pop a filter on and have infrared and all that.
Holy cow, man. Some of the stuff that they're getting out of that is amazing.
Yeah.
And I have a $35 recorder, digital recorder, and it never picks up any of that stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, obviously the technology has gotten a lot better since the
90s. Buffering is way better. The sound compression is better. You aren't going to have nearly as much artifacting. And that's the thing. Like, a lot of people don't realize that there are DSPs, digital signal processors, inside of that digital device that were not there inside of an old palm quarter.
Nope.
That was just a microphone and a record head with a preamp. There are compression ratios, things like that. It's being crunched down. So you can get all kinds of wild artifacting. You can get all kinds of, like, background noises that were bumped up because somebody's talking, and because they're that far away, the microphone is pushing a compressor in to try and get as much as possible. All kinds of stuff. So
it's completely understandable. You know, you come up with theories of okay, well, digital's better because it's more sensitive, and it's able to allow the ghost to manipulate it. And you can come up with a theory on anything that's happening when evidence isn't required.
Yes.
You know, if you can say, well, what is this? And you can just go, okay, I can logically go, all right, the reason why digital is better is because the ghost can manipulate zeros and ones and can mask its voice in there. One of the, I need to look this up again. Mm. I apologize for even bringing it up,
okay.
But it's worth talking
about. I like the way that you were prefacing the fact that I don't have all the facts here.
I don't.
Beautiful.
But Dave Schrader did a thing with a guy when he was on Darkness Radio, and this guy had a recording that he said he took to a bunch of sound engineers and he took to professional linguists, and they're like, they can't make it, it's a language, but nobody knows what it is. And it says, my baby, save it. Right.
Now I've just got to wonder if you can't identify the language, no offense, Dave Schrader. I haven't seen this evidence.
No, this is Dave Schrader actually brought that up and was like, this isn't what it is. Because the guy's playing it. And it's like, no, it says,
okay, good.
When you play this backwards, it says, my baby, save it. Or something like that.
Sure.
Well, come to find out, it was actually an audio imprint for the recording that they record. You know this on some of the tapes and stuff like that. They'll do something on the other side of it, and they will an audio signature or it's like an audio watermark.
Yeah,
and if you played it backwards, it said the company.
Nice.
So and this guy wrote he was on all the shows, and you know, there's talking all about it and everything. And Dave was like, well, play it backwards. It's like it was like DP audio demo.
Yeah.
That's what it said. Like, you say it backwards, it's like, it's my baby, save it.
Yeah.
And
hey, if you play the right part of Queen backward, you'll literally hear them say, start to smoke marijuana. It's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah,
and there is the whole concept of reverse speech and things like that. Don't get me wrong.
And don't get me wrong.
Is the ghost aware of reverse speech, and are they using it? Is the question. And that's kind of the same thing that I ask when do you want to research portals? Cool. Research Bigfoot? Okay. But now you got Bigfoot and a portal together. What part of the investigation do you start from to pinch or move that?
Right.
Like you normally would with an investigation.
Sure.
To funnel that data down. And I think that's kind of where, unfortunately, I think a lot of investigators, Greg, suffer from what a lot of people do with the modern day media. Civs work fantastic.
Right.
As long as they have the amount of data they're supposed to have in it. Once you start putting more in there, it's not going to filter properly.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of people end up with a lot of data, and they don't know what to do with it. They don't know how to comb through it. And like you were saying earlier, the want of, I guess, self-confirmation, the want of confirmation of belief.
Yep.
Can sometimes push you to the point of dismissing the evidence in front of you.
Yeah. 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 I love watching cops work a canine when they get a police dog. And you watch them, and there are some let the dog do their work, and some of them will get the dog back on track. You know, it's like, no, boy, come on. It's not over there. Come over here. Let the dog work.
Let the dog do his work.
And
he's the hardest working one there.
When you're trying to force your will into your investigation, that'll get you off track really bad. It needs to flow. I mean, obviously, you need industry standards and best practices your investigation, but not try to force it in there. And I see it all the time in law enforcement where a detective will get a case. He'll take a quick look at it, or they'll step into a room, see stuff scattered around, blood, whatever, and they'll go, I know exactly what happened.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
I've seen this before.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may have seen it, and you can throw that in the back of your mind and go, okay, in that case, this happened. I need to watch for this and that. But you need to follow the evidence. You don't need to get a preconceived notion of what this is, so you can hurry up and wrap this up and manage your case load properly.
How often do you see that in the paranormal world? Because you've been out doing private investigations for years, years and years, and worked with many groups, done many private things. How often do you see that fact?
Well, there's always somebody in the group that is, I'm going to use the word that's not
gung-ho.
That's not meant to be offensive, but it, you know, the real true believer syndrome. Mm. And they go into a place, I kind of mentioned it up there.
Will not be convinced otherwise.
Yeah. I'm looking for the woman in white, and whatever evidence I'm presented, I will transfer that into that's the woman in white there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, instead of maybe it was like what Nikki was talking about. Maybe this is Faye or a djinn.
Sure.
You know, if they're a djinn and they can do everything and they trick us all the time and they don't like us.
Maybe it's like Ryan was talking about. Whenever I have him on the show, we talk about it all the time. The fact that the idea of the egregor, a group of people who, because of common belief, common faith, common effort toward a common end, have literally manifested something into the real world.
Yep.
Like, I mean, prime example is the director of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Right.
Was highly afraid that he actively inspired, and like the demon of Freddy Krueger that he created went and embodied and possessed the Night Stalker.
Right.
Like, Clive was pretty well convinced of this himself after seeing everything and just the concept of the egregore that he based this on. He was like, I unfortunately think I helped bring that into the world.
Right. Right.
You know, and that's a thing. That's
it is a thing. And even if it was just you, let's say, what's that game? They steal the cars in the game.
Grand Theft Auto.
Grand Theft Auto. This is a very simplistic
GTA,
way.
Sorry, man.
It is a very simplistic thing, but you create a game like that, and then a group of kids sees it and go, I want to really do this, and they go out and do
That's exactly what just happened in Austin.
Yep.
With the street takeover.
Sure.
And literally the guy on social media was like, we're trying to be the new Fast and Furious out here. It's like, you know that's a movie.
He's going to jail.
Dude. Like, you know, they blocked off the streets for that, right? Everybody on the side was an actor and they had stunt coordinators. They weren't just like out in the middle of an intersection raising ruckus.
Yeah. So you can look at it from just a very pragmatic viewpoint like that, or you could take one more step as far as stay traditional, non-spiritual, and say psychological. Somebody's thinking or doing something psychologically all in their head, or it maybe it's spiritual or whatever. That whole creation's weird.
I think one of the beautiful things that you really bring to this from your world of law enforcement, Craig, is the and what I try to do with my show. I try to tell people all the time, I won't have any discussion with anybody. I am all about the open debate. Without the exchange of ideas, humanity does not march forward.
Right.
So you got to be willing to at least have the conversation and hear somebody out, not try to convince them of your paradigm. But I think what you bring to the table more than a lot of people is that tablespoon of salt, not a grain of salt, a tablespoon of salt and a true point of skepticism. I think that people in all of these communities, the word skeptic is just as dirty as conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
Just as dirty. Because people get the wrong idea. I'm a skeptic. I'm a believer's believer. But I'm a skeptic, man, and I'm going to look at everything with skeptical eyes before I go to the point of evidence, before or to the point of belief.
Right.
I mean, and so many people are unwilling to accept the fact that the job of a skeptic is not to poo-poo everything and get rid of everything. It's to see all of the options and literally be of the mind of like, well, darn, that's new information. My mind has changed.
Right. Are you familiar with a guy named Michael Shermer?
Yes, I am.
So Michael Shermer is not a skeptic. He was a editor of Skeptic Magazine. He's an amazing dude.
Yeah.
Amazing dude. He is not a skeptic. He is absolutely a cynic. If you bring
that's
up
that's not proper
anything,
skepticism
no,
to
it's
just
not.
Slice things apart.
No.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I have a huge amount of respect for him, except when he rolls his eyes.
Yeah.
You know, the man, if I'm going to say Bigfoot, he'll just do this number. Well, I know he has.
You've already put the wall up.
Yeah.
You've already put the wall up. You brought the mortar to the table.
Yeah. What I try to tell people, what I try to share with people, I should say, is there's two points. There is true believer, no matter what's going to happen, I'm going to believe whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then there's cynic, where they're not even going to listen to you.
Well,
a skeptic is between those two lines, and they float around like an abacus bead, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so they go toward believer, or they go toward cynic based on the evidence that they evaluate.
Exactly.
And their
based
training,
on the datum at hand.
Yeah, their training and their experience on how to evaluate that evidence, and it's going to go that way. So skepticism, you have to be a skeptic to be an investigator. If you say, well, most of the people that don't like skeptics, they don't know the definition.
Yes, exactly.
They're getting it confused with cynic.
Yes. So, and that's what they've met is cynics, not actual skeptics. And that would be a crisp high five moment. Absolutely. And, you know, you really have to be concerned about some fields of research when it comes to that, because it really does muddy the waters. All it does is bring muddy feet to the pool.
Yep.
And we have to be careful with that. We have to try, when we go out on any excursion, Bigfoot, paranormal, UFO, UAP, to be coming at it with the most scientific evidentiary point. Because, I mean, it's like King Gerhardt says all the day, we can have pictures, we can have video. That's not going to be what proves this.
No, it's not.
A picture will not hold up in the court of law. A picture is literally... The word just left my head, Greg.
Well, it's secondary evidence.
Yes,
It's something that you could throw in with circumstance.
That's the one, circumstantial.
Yeah.
It's circumstantial.
A lot of people get it confused. So if I take a picture of... let me give you an example. If I take a picture of a bag of weed and I weigh it, I have written evidence, documentary evidence of how much the bag of weed weighs. I have my report that describes the bag of weed. I have the picture that you can see what I supposedly was looking at when I took it. And then I take that bag of weed and I throw it away. And I charge you with possession of marijuana. Well, in court, they're going to want to see that.
That sounds so familiar to me, Greg. I don't know why.
It's okay.
I don't know why, Greg.
We'll talk later.
Thanks for the triggering moment.
I can't wait till I get triggered. I'll be retired within a year, and I'm freaking getting triggered, my friend. I promise you.
Yeah. But that's just it. You know, you have to be really careful. It's like Ryan says on the show all the time whenever he's on, correlation is not causation.
That's right.
It's correlation, and that's really interesting. And we can explore that as one of many windows, but we cannot make that the literal foundation.
Somebody brought in a chupacabra.
Of everything.
Look at that little baby chupacabra. Look at him. He's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's really interesting. I'd love to have you on again and again and again to talk about stuff, Greg, because once again, I think, especially when it comes to Bigfoot, things like that, like trying to come up with like an evidence kit that people can buy, where literally it's like, here's a field kit, proper swabs, things like that,
right.
You know, where it's like, you have to think about that kind of stuff. You have to make sure that what you're getting, like, sure, you could use cotton swabs off the shelf, but some dude named Johnny was throwing those into the pack. His DNA's on them.
That's right.
A hair hit it. His spittle hit it, what have you. There's 101 things that could contaminate that cotton swab instead of going to a medical supply company and buying a sterile swab.
Yep. And even when you do all of that,
how do you care for the evidence? How do you keep the? I mean, that was a big issue. I live in Austin. I'm from Austin. That was a big issue with APD. Oh my God! When I heard that, I was like, it destroyed me inside.
Dude,
it destroyed me. The fact that like the refrigerator went down and there was just years of evidence that was deprecated. Just deprecated.
Yeah.
And even now, to know that, like, if you properly store evidence, used to be a lot of the means by which that we got that data from evidence was very deprecable. It destroyed the evidence.
Absolutely.
And now we have ways of getting all kinds of new, like, literally in the last month, there have been no less than 3 cases across America of exonerations because of new DNA evidence.
It's new ways
to examine the DNA.
Yep.
And all I say all the time is thank God they could properly keep the evidence long enough.
Yep. You look at you can take a deep dive in the yogurt shop murders in Austin as far as the horrible.
God, that's some creepy stuff.
Well, and just the horrible, the poor way that that whole crime scene was handled. It destroyed the whole thing. And those girls' murders are unanswered and
because of poor evidentiary process.
And it's and that was in the 90s. You know, it wasn't like it was back in the 1950s.
I mean, it was when we were learning, keep everything because of DNA. We thought, keep it all.
We thought that we knew what we were doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So, yeah.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting because science is always growing. Science is always changing. We can't make it a religion. We can't make it, you know, always the same. If it's static, it's not science. It's not growing and changing. Right. So I know you have emceeing duties. Thank you again. Let everybody know before we let you go.
Okay.
Shameless self-promotion time, Greg. Where can go to contact you? Where can they go to buy your books? Other than the Curious Realm store, of course, because we'll be adding these. Where can they go to contact you for investigative work? Things like that.
You can contact me straight through my website. It's www.theparanormaldetective.com or coldcaselegends.com.
All right.
So you can get there. That goes over to my YouTube stuff. And
great. Fantastic. Well, thank you once again for your time on this very busy first annual Texas Monsters and Legends Conference here in Cibolo, Texas. Please stay tuned, everybody. We will be right back after this commercial break with more fantastic interviews with speakers here at the first annual Texas Monsters and Legends Conference. We'll be right back after this. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today
and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Well, hello everybody and welcome back to our continuing coverage of the first annual Texas Monsters and Legends Conference right here in Cibolo, Texas. We are joined by our good friend and cryptozoologist Ryan Edwards, author of Cryptids of the World. How you doing, bud?
Doing good.
Man, you gave a presentation a while ago that was knock out of the park, dude. And there's a lot of books. There's a lot of books here. There's a lot of books in this genre, Ryan. But yours is probably the one that I recommend more to anybody when they are trying to step into the world of cryptozoology. And mainly because it's not a like a lot of books, a focus on a creature or even research. It's the way I describe it to people. It is a cryptid wiki in the palm of your hand.
Pretty much.
And not everybody has gone through the effort to, I guess, compendium cryptids from literally around the world.
Yeah.
And categorize them into like groups, things like that. So for you to give your presentation earlier was fantastic, man. How did you first start getting into this, and what made you decide to make the compendium to begin with?
Well, pretty much, I was like, I was every little kid, love dinosaurs, love animals, things like that. And the mysteries of the natural world was always interesting to me. I was into like UFOs and ghosts and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Then I ran into cryptozoology using that. And with me, like, for my book, Cryptids of the World, I kind of take examples from the past. Like bestiaries from the medieval age, where they would like have every page dedicated to a lion.
Here's the unicorn, cockatrice.
Things like that. Yes.
Yeah.
And even animals that don't even exist. So with me, I was like, okay, what if I do that, but just with cryptids? Like, even if it's just a unknown one that people barely have heard of.
Yeah.
Like, on my presentation, I bring up the Gazika and like certain Congolese dinosaurs that are seen that you don't even hear about nowadays, because those are only really brought up by the old researchers, people like Bernard Hoovermans, Lauren Coleman. And these are cryptids that, because there's no sightings anymore, you don't hear about them anymore.
Mm.
And even though you don't hear about them anymore, I believe that still you should still be educated on them, because it might be lessons to learn from them.
Well, and if anything, it's a, I guess, the equivalent of a use case, you know, and even to explore the old accounts and compare and contrast them versus modern accounts, especially something like that where there has been a lapse in report for so long, to see a report come out and be able to compare and contrast it to old ones is really interesting and very important, much more than interesting.
Yes, like, and it also brings up like what they brought up earlier, the kind of separation of like how research is done nowadays. Mm. Like if you look at a lot of the old researchers, the Bernard Hoovermans, the Lone Colemans, it's done differently than how we do it nowadays. And you also kind of see a separation of cryptids. Cryptids back in like, I like to call it like the early days of cryptozoology, were very flesh and blood based. We're kind of based on folklore. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, they're more based on like internet creepypastas and ideas created from a modern day oral tradition.
Yeah, yeah. And last time you were on the show, we spent quite a bit of time exploring the concept of paranormal trope.
Yeah.
And the idea of how these tropes, like a prime example would be Slenderman, how literally a competition, a fiction competition on creepypasta has become such an entrenched part of pop culture that it actually becomes a reflection of being real and starts having sightings.
Yes. And like also a big thing with me, especially with the cryptids, especially like the old ones, is why aren't there any more sightings?
Mm.
Like, is this a possibility that a creature just went extinct that we'll never even realize exists in the first place? That's like one big thing with me in cryptozoology is conservation based.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we must discover the creature in order to protect it in the first place. Like with Sasquatch. Like, we need to discover it before we protect it. And, like,
there are a couple forward-thinking places like Oregon that have made it a protected species.
Yes. And then you even got to worry about, okay, we discovered a creature. Like, I use Sasquatch for the example primarily because, like, okay, we discover it. What's the next step?
Yeah, yeah.
Do cryptozoologists still research it? Do zoologists come in and take over?
Yeah. Do we have a Senate panel hearing?
Yeah.
You know, like, what is the next step then? And it's interesting because I run in a lot of these communities, as you know, and in the UFO UAP community, that has been a big part of discussion here in the last couple of years is, okay, if, then what?
Yes.
You know, and
Air Force coming
how do we, what is the next step? Who is the emissary?
Yes. Who's going to represent the species?
Because you
have to have someone to represent.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, take, for instance, Sasquatch. If it was discovered, do all the cryptozoologists give over their evidence to some zoologists, some primatologists? Do they keep on researching the animal and know, okay, it's real now. Now let's start conservation efforts. Like, what's the next step of discovery?
Well, and I mean, especially of the fact of any protected species, you got to know the number population in order to protect it, in order to know what means you have to go through to protect it. You got to know the standing population of what you're trying to protect, its home range, everything else. So, I mean, like you said, just finding Bigfoot is literally the tip of that iceberg. Like, there is so much more underneath the water surface right there.
Yes. It's like, because I've always seen, of course, cryptozoology is a science of unknown species.
Sure.
But I see it as the first step to zoology.
Yeah.
Like, we must look for the creature in order to discover it.
Absolutely.
And a lot of times, a lot of these cryptozoologists, we look at the old traditions, we look at the stories, and we're like, okay, like, look at the okapi, look at the giant panda. The indigenous people were already talking about it before the discovery was made.
Yeah.
So if we just take it as stories.
Lowland gorilla.
Yes. Yeah. If we just take it as stories, we'll never have that discovery. It's a cryptozoologist's job to look into that and be like, okay, let's look at the plausibility. Let's go discover that creature. And then the next step will be true zoology.
Yeah, well, and you know, once again, as we've had the conversation before, we had the conversation with Greg Lawson a while ago, the idea of not allowing the evidence, not allowing the points of datum, because it may go against the, not even the line that science is towing, but the current known science. Just because it's a stands against the current known science doesn't mean it's not.
Yes. Like, I always bring this up when people bring up the paranormal. Supernatural is just what's beyond the normal.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's not science. It's a science that is unknown.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's just it. You know, once again, we get very carried away with all the alphabets, UFO, UAP, paranormal, everything else.
Yeah.
We tie paranormal to you know, ghosts, all kinds of things, but all it means is not the norm.
Yes.
It means it's outside of the realm of normality, whatever's happening.
Yeah.
So we have the known quantitative of normal. Here's this. Like,
and thing, and people bring it up all the time. People make the joke, what is normal nowadays?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, okay, if we have that saying, then what is paranormal nowadays?
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, and what's paranormal in 5 years?
Yes.
You know, I mean, heck, in one of the concepts we talked about just this last week with Jared Murphy was the idea of loss of knowledge of society, and I picked up and I held in my hand an SD card, a terabyte SD card. Like, I can hold a lot of data on a terabyte, man.
Yes.
The question is, in 50 years from now, somebody finds that, it's full of data, got an SD card reader, do you know what an SD card is?
Yes.
There's data locked inside of an 8-track tape. Do you know what an 8-track tape is, and do you know how to play it? Do you have the means by which to get the data off of it?
I think of how many ancient societies and ancient languages that will never be understood just because we don't know how to change it into
art. Well, precisely. And like I was saying in our conversation last night, I would challenge you right now to go out anywhere right here in the country. And you live in San Antonio. I'd challenge you to go out with a beam of wood, just a round pole, and find you a master craftsman to turn that into a spiraled column by hand.
Yeah.
50 years ago, you could have found that dude and probably a competition guy to get a second quote from.
Yes.
50 years. 50 years. Within the span of less than a generation, Ryan, we have lost that.
We've lost that.
That knowledge is almost gone from our society entirely.
Yep.
So that's exactly how fast it can happen. When you're talking about, we talked about this. All it takes is one grandparent, one parent,
yep,
not carrying the story on. And that whole crop of kids will never know the story, and it will never get passed down.
Yes. And then, like, that's why with me, especially like what we talk about quite a bit, is the next generation of cryptozoology.
Yeah.
That's why, like, I try to look at researchers that came before me,
yeah,
and say, okay, how can I carry on that legacy? How can I carry on that type of research?
Well, and how can you respectfully carry on that research in the modern world? Not, yes, to disrespect the other communities that are into that and into the paranormal meets cryptid and everything else. No, nobody is denying any of that. Nobody is denying anybody's experiences, sightings, anything.
Yes.
But when you're talking about carrying on the, like you're saying, the mantle of the scientists that founded the science of cryptozoology, is that doing the best for it? Or is the hard science that we can prove, that we can find? Because like Ken says all the time, Ken Gerhardt, we can take all the pictures we want. We can bring in all the videos we want. Until there is genetic evidence on the table, science ain't going to take it.
Yep.
They won't take it. Like, you can bring in all the pictures you want. Like, you can bring in pictures of an animal. Cool. You know what we need to do? We need to find that animal.
Yeah. Like, that's why, like, yeah, one thing people forget a lot is the kind of power scaling of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
You can have all the anecdotal references you want, but that's not going to prove a species exists.
Well, and once again, correlation is not causation.
Yes.
Just because something happens and this happens next to it, like we were saying with Greg Lawson, like, he's a cop.
Yes.
Like, that man is a badge-holding police officer. That is called circumstantial evidence in a court of law, and it does not stand. If you were the dude sitting in the defense chair and that's what they were putting up in court, would you be happy that they're trying to nail you on circumstantial evidence? No.
It's like someone saw you at 3 a.m. doing this, and it's like, that wasn't even me.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. There's probably a lot of people out at 3 a.m. doing a lot of things. Doesn't,
yes,
mean that was me doing it.
Yes.
You know? Just because I was not home at 3 a.m. doesn't mean that was me that did it.
Yes.
So, yeah, we have to be really, really careful as the science moves forward in this modern day and age, because we have to try to learn methods of preservation of evidence, because once again, like, you look at the court of law, and last month there have been 3 guys exonerated by new DNA evidence. One of them was literally a month and a half away from execution. 20 years he spent in prison. Had they not been able to examine that old evidence from 20 years ago with new DNA standards, it would have never happened. Would have never happened. So you have to be willing to look at old evidence with new eyes.
Yeah, and also look at the court of law.
Yeah.
You have a chain of evidence.
That's
like,
right.
If someone doesn't know what that is for 2 seconds, chain has been broken.
Yeah.
That's no longer evidence now.
Yeah.
So we have to use that same type of principles.
Yeah, the same protocol.
For zoology, for
absolutely.
Paranormal research.
Yeah. Yeah, and once again, be willing to cast confirmation biases aside. Be willing to... I'm a believer's believer, but I don't think I'm ever going to let my belief cloud my judgment.
Yes, that's like...
Now, granted, that will never remove my belief, my faith,
no, of course,
anything
not.
Like that.
Of course not. But how we said before, the confirmation bias. If you go out in the woods with Bigfoot on the brain, you're going to look...
You're probably going to find something Bigfoot.
Yes.
And you really have to wonder and question, because, there's a guy in the San Antonio MUFON group. Gonna leave him nameless. Pretty sure if you were finding anomalies in the sky behind your house in San Antonio 5 times a week, you'd probably be selling tickets, guy.
Yeah.
That is no longer an anomaly. That is a known quantitative now. If it happens 5 times a week.
Multiple people there, they go call it.
Yeah, feel free to come by on Wednesday. Every Wednesday night for the next month, I guarantee you will see it, And that's the thing, is you've got to be willing to put that aside. You've got to be willing to accept the fact if it's happening every night, it is probably not paranormal.
Yes.
That's normal.
Yes. it's the logic of it.
The paranormal will rarely be normal in your life, you know, maybe if you live in a haunted house.
Yeah.
Maybe if you're a multiple abductee, but it will rarely be the norm. In your life.
It's the outward. It's the edge of reality.
Yeah.
It's the edge of what's normal anymore?
Yeah.
It's not what's your normalcy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're getting ready to hop back over to the next presentation. I want to thank you for taking some time out. You're always hopping over at these conferences. I always thank you taking time away from your table. Let everybody know where they can go to get their copy of Cryptids of the World, other than the Curious Realm store, where they can go to follow everything Ryan Edwards, Ryan?
Yes. Cryptids of the World is available at most bookstores. If you look on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, Half Price Books, wherever you guys can find books, and probably be there. If you're interested in me and my research, thecryptochronicles.net. If you go there, you'll find my website where I have my events coming up. I have my podcast linked there as well. I know it has not been worked on recently, but I will try to get back to that, buddies. And then if you can find me on YouTube, if you look up the Crypto Chronicles on YouTube, you'll find me and my podcast.
All right. Well, thanks as always for the time, my friend.
Uncle.
I always love seeing you here. I love your book, and I loved the presentation today. Fantastic job at your first crack at a presentation. That was very, very well done, man.
I think I did well.
You did great. While you're online checking out all the amazing work from Ryan Edwards, author of Cryptids of the World, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is the website. It's where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can find our experiencer onboarding form. If you're an experiencer of the paranormal, cryptids, ghosts, if you're a targeted individual or government whistleblower, stop on by CuriousRealm.com/story. Share your story with us. Share your evidence. We will share it with our professionals and experts on the show. We are getting back to the conference right now. We're about to give away raffle tickets. Stay tuned right after this message for more interviews from the first annual Texas Monsters and Legends Conference right here in Cibolo, Texas, folks. We'll see you right after this.
With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD,
True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Well, hello everybody and welcome back to our final bit of coverage of the official first annual Texas Monsters and Legends Conference here in Cibolo, Texas. Brad and Barry Kling brothers of Chasing Texas, or Chasing Ghost Texas Style, as well as Ghost Labs, have put on this amazing paranormal event. It's been fantastic. With us in this section, we actually have Nikki Folsom. She is the author of The Haunted Harlequin, as well as Conflicted Reality. She gave a great presentation earlier about fairies.
Yes.
I have been wanting to do an episode on fairies for so long. I need to have you on to have do a complete conversation on it. But here in the 15 minutes we have, familiarize our audience with a little bit of the panoply that is the fae, because so many people are familiar with, I mean, we just had St. Patrick's Day, mm-hmm. so of course they're familiar with leprechauns, supposedly the ones that were not really desirable by the fae when they were born, so they were outcast, and that's why they're so curmudgeon-y. But not many people realize how many families of fae, fairies, that there are, and the fact that it's not just the one location that has these stories.
Oh, no. I will tell you, there are countless mythologies. And, I mean, folklore could be a culture. It could be a religion. It could be a family. Mm. So there are just so many different pieces and parts of the fae. And, of course, it's up for debate. Mm-hmm. Whoever you're talking to will give you a different impression. But for anything from mermaids, which... huge debate, but that's considered part of the fae. They're part of the water element, so which is fantastic. I'm fascinated by it just because there are so many creatures within it, the possibilities I was talking about. But there are the elements of that Paracelsus came up with in the 16th century, mm-hmm. of the earth, air, water, fire, and all of the creatures fit in at least one of these. And I'm one of the examples I gave was of the Nuklavi of Celtic lore. He actually is a sea monster, fae, but he's also, when he comes on land, he's something completely different. So he falls into earth and water, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
But everything that you can possibly think of, from elves and gnomes and dwarfs and leprechauns and tree spirits and sylphs, and it just goes on and on and on. The banshee, which is fantastic. I just think there's so many fascinating things, and there's so much misconception about the fae.
Well, and especially whenever you're talking about lore of banshees, things like that. The actors team seem to get a little pigeonholed sometimes. We hear one tradition, and that becomes the predominant, when really there is more than one tradition that are being interwoven together.
Absolutely. And I'll be honest, I don't have the bandwidth in my brain, I don't think anybody does, to be able to hold all the lore in there. But it's just fascinating to me. I thought the leprechaun was Irish, and that was it.
Yeah.
I thought that was the only one. Oh, there's like 10 different that I've discovered so far.
Yeah, 10 different versions of leprechauns.
Absolutely.
Just of leprechauns.
Absolutely. And the difference, like the Italian, and I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but the Italian one, he just wears a red hat. That's the only difference. And there are some that there's a little variation to the story where they hoard the gold versus they take you to the gold, you know, the tradition of that. But it's still the same thing. I mean, it's similar, but it's just a different name.
Yeah. And, you know, in my house, I have his name is Int.
Int, okay.
Int, short for entity. don't know what it is, but and my wife's been there when it's happened, where I've been talking to her and I put something down. I walk and I talk and I go back, and the object I put down is physically gone.
Wow.
And about 10 minutes later, after frantically searching and her helping me search, there it is.
Oh, they're pranksters. You made
like
a brownie.
Right back where I put it. And I'm like, you saw it. You saw it. I'm not a crazy person. Like, I know you might think I'm a crazy person when I'm talking about Int out loud, but you've seen it happen now. And it's strange, because when you talk about a lot of these stories, especially when you start going back through village lores, things like that, there really is. A lot of people forget the fact that, you know, elves were cobblers. They helped you with things. They were very much, I guess, almost akin to like the muse.
Absolutely.
In ancient Greece, things like that, where there were spirits all over the place. What you put up on your hearth and what you welcomed into your home was what came and helped you. And
that's exactly right.
Gave you that assistance.
And if you offend them, call them wrong. Well, that's the brownie. You call them the wrong name, but they're all the same. You call them the wrong name, you forget to leave them out, or you forget to leave a reward out for them or an offering out for them. They'll leave. Mm-hmm. They absolutely will. But the elves, like fairy, where everybody lumps things into the fairy category. Mm. Elves are the same. In other cultures, they call it an elf, and that's just what everything is. It's all these other little creatures.
Well, and even elves fall in the world of the fae.
They do.
When you're talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastically interesting to me how long these traditions have been around. How, especially in the local lores and traditions, they are pretty well unchanged.
Absolutely. Now, you'll find that people won't talk about it. That's the most interesting to me is I really want to sit down and have conversations with folks in Ireland or Scotland.
Well, I mean, a prime example of things like that is I'm Cajun myself. You're hard-pressed to find an old Cajun and have them point out the traiteur in town, mm-hmm. the person that you go to for the hoodoo remedies, things like that out in the woods, that kind of stuff. But there's one. There's one in almost every town.
Absolutely. Always has been.
But you're pretty hard-pressed to find that person nowadays. Not that they aren't still there. They just don't talk about it.
They don't talk about it. And what I've found, what I think is interesting, and this is probably going to... Everybody's going to scream, but I find it interesting that there's a lot of tie-ins with religion.
Mm.
So that fear that was instilled—I mean,
oh, absolutely,
it is crazy, and it makes me sad because all the possibilities of things that could have been out there that have been driven into silence. We don't talk about it because it might offend someone. And looking back, going way, way, way back. That's where it all started. It all started when the power was with the medicine women and the cunning folk and and the supernatural folks. And then when the power was taken away, it went to the elders or the
It went to the powers that be.
Thank you.
So to speak. It's been interesting to kind of see, I guess, a return of humanity to... Not necessarily that want to be in nature. There's always been folks who have been out hunting, fishing, hiking. That's never really stopped in humanity. But to see the spiritual attention start kind of turning back the way that it was is pretty remarkable. And to see the attitudes of society changing toward these things now, and you know, for all of you out there, like, hey, you know, fairies were proved fake long, long ago. No. The pictures of fairies that were presented,
Cottingley,
were proved fake.
That's right. That's correct.
It doesn't mean the whole thing's poo-poo. It doesn't mean it's all gone or anything like that. Because once again, the oral traditions are still there, the cultural traditions are still there.
Absolutely. That's why it's important to go talk to those folks. And we always didn't, I mean, you heard me talk about this before. When we passed things down orally, when people, they didn't know how to read and write. So the best way
to... We didn't have a language.
Right. How else are you going to pass it on?
Not a written language anyway.
So that's how they did it. And I'm happy that it's still around. I do think the reason you find people finding their way back to spiritualism and nature is because social media and the 24/7 constant
barrage.
Thank you. It's being exposed that there are gaps. There are gaps. There are pieces that there's no answer to. And
the cogs just don't fit.
Right. So it's good.
And like we say all the time with Ryan Edwards, King Gerhardt, Lyle Blackburn, all of them, we've had the conversation of evidence, going, starting with anecdotal, going to scientific, things like that. And the thing that you have to remember is the anecdotal. You've got to start there. And then, of course, you know, like people like Adam Davies say, once I have enough local reports about something, then I start spiraling outward on topics. And is there enough food in the area? Is there enough water? Is there enough shelter?
Yes.
Is there a chance for a breeding population?
Yes.
How wide does the spiral get now? And once I've got enough, like, 6 points in that spiral, now I've got reason to go actually put foot on the ground and do something.
Yes.
But for science, for even us as people, to take these cultural stories that have been around for sometimes thousands of years and dismiss them, or even outright to dismiss the existence of something like Sasquatch, when, 98th percentile of all evidence points to no.
There's 2% that says, pretty good chance. So if you're building a house, do you just leave 2% out?
No.
Do you just leave 2% of a wall?
No.
Totally cool with that. I'll totally buy the house. You did a great job. Don't worry about that 2% of the wall. You know, like, no. I took shop class, man. Like, that's too big of a crack to fill in. You got to recut that wood and make it fit. So for any science to not investigate the 2%, that to me is like flares in the sky. That's not even alarm bells. Like, you can't leave a 2% remainder.
Absolutely.
Like, I wouldn't have been allowed in chemistry class to not represent that 2% loss.
Well, and if, good.
If, well, I was just about to say, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the residue.
Thank you. Thank you. But because there's, I mean, science was built, that knowledge was built because we discovered things. And if we stop trying to discover, then how do we grow?
Yeah.
How do we grow? Well, and I can tell you, with my own eyes, I saw the three blue colorful orbs in the Edinburgh vaults. And there were 10, 15 of us in the room, and only two of us in the room saw them. And another young guy, and a young Scottish guy. And I was like, there's a reason for this. There's nothing wrong with my eyes. Another person witnessed it.
Yeah. So, well, and even the fact of, you know, if these things live in a different vibrational state, anything like that, you know, that's a big part of what they're looking into in UFO UAP right now, as to literally why two out of three people in a group can see it and one can't.
That's right.
They are in tune to that frequency and the other person is not.
That's right.
And many cases for that, I mean, look all across the animal kingdom. You got a dog, you got a cat, they see in things that literally you cannot. The spectrum of light that we see is literally a 2% slice of the entire electromagnetic spectrum.
Oh, well, go out and meditate for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, like put not blindfold, but a like an eye mask on, and then take it off and walk outside and watch the different colors.
Yeah, yeah. Watch everything before it settles down.
Yeah,
it's pretty incredible.
It is.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for the time on this very, very busy first annual Texas Monsters and Legends Conference. Let everybody know. I mean, we'll, of course, be adding your books to our store online. We're going to have you on for a whole episode very soon.
Awesome.
But let everybody know where they can go to find their copies of The Haunted Harlequin and Conflicted Reality, Nikki.
They are on Amazon, or you can go check me out on ConflictedReality.com, and you can see all my upcoming events, and you can go to my books, you can read about me. I have to update the photos, but we've got lots of great stuff.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much
for
your time. While you're online checking out everything from Nikki Folsom, make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com. That's where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can find all the videos. That's where you can find the store. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into our coverage for the first annual Texas Monsters and Legends Conference. Thank you so much. Keep tuning in. We'll see you soon. Stay curious, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the knowledge vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit HCUniversalNetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.